This is Patrick Patterson, and you're listening to the NTTB Podcast. Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis. Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis. Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis.
All right, and welcome into episode 21 of the NTTB podcast. As always, I'm your host, Alex, joined in by my co-host, Anthony.
What's up, yo?
All right, and we just got through with another week of Thunder basketball, four games on the slate, and we went 2-2 this week. So what'd you think about this week? So the last podcast, I voiced a lot of my frustrations, and the key word of that podcast was frustration. You know, I was very frustrated. It didn't look like the team was necessarily heading in the right direction. It seemed like we kept on hitting a wall. And so, you know, this week, 2-2, if you look at the record, just looking at the record, it kind of looks like the same thing. You know, what did you think? Well, I mean, I thought we were trending.
I thought we played a little bit better.
In the right direction?
We were offensively heading in the right direction, per se. Mm-hmm. It was starting to make more sense, but it's kind of hard coming off a triple overtime win to then play the next night against a team that, yes, they don't have Porzingis, they don't have Hardaway.
They're rested.
So Porzingis has a sore knee, Hardaway was ready. You know, Westbrook played 52 minutes. It's kind of hard coming off of that to expect them to then come out and have another fantastic performance and win that game.
He had a pretty good performance. Don't get me wrong. I mean,
Westbrook, no, he played well.
You can see the legs were a little bit weak at the end of that game.
Adams was out because of concussion. You know, the bench is still yet to figure it out, per se. So 2-2, I think, is honestly, I saw us going 3-1 this weekend.
Yeah.
I knew Philly was going to be tough. I didn't realize triple overtime tough, but
I mean, it's 2-2 with three road games in there.
Yeah.
So that's not – I mean, in the NBA, regardless of what team you are, if you're going to lose a game, you're more than likely going to lose it on the road than you are at home. And so we had three games on the road, and we went, you know, 2-1 in that stretch. We lost the only home game we had in there. We got mollywopped in that game.
Yes, against a team that was coming off a nine-game losing streak.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and start with that game, because that was the first game in this week. So on Monday – we played Charlotte at home. We were at home, and we lost 116-103. And it's just one of those things where I believe that Sunday before, or that Saturday before, we had beat Memphis, right? Mm-hmm. We had an emotional win against Memphis. Right. I think it was overtime, too.
Yeah, we grinded that one out.
Yeah, grinded that one out in the grindhouse, and we actually came away with a win in that one. And, you know, it looked like, you know, it's hard to tell when you look at the close victories whether they are a microcosm of the team just being better, having more talent, and just eventually wearing another team out, or that we're heading in the right direction. It's kind of hard to kind of see and differentiate which is which. And so just like everything else with this team, you know, you take one step forward, you win that game in Memphis. It looked like it was it was going to be a loss, and we came back and we win. You know, we beat Memphis in pretty extraordinary fashion. And then we come back, we go home, and we're thinking, okay, let's go ahead and build off of this. And then just like we have done all this season, we poop the bed, and sadly we're pooping the bed that we sleep in, and we lose to Charlotte 116-103 in a game where they completely looked listless. Like, it's like they came out and they said, hey, we're at home. They should just give us the victory anyway. So let's not even try that hard. You know, so, you know, we
Jeremy Lamb comes in and I think he goes off for 16 points, 17.
14, yeah.
Still, that's more points than he's ever scored when he was playing for us.
No, that's true. I mean, yeah, but, I mean, it's just, you know, so Westbrook goes. So it's kind of like, so the first quarter, first half is kind of like back and forth. You know, we go up by 6-7 points, then we go ahead and let them go on a run, and they go up by one or two, and eventually they build that up to like 5 or 6, and then we, you know, make another run, so on and so forth. So we head to beginning of third quarter, we're down by about 6, I think, and we claw back, And so Westbrook makes this great coast-to-coast just dunk on, I believe it was Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, crowd's going crazy. The score's tied at 66. And we're thinking, I'm thinking, okay, you know, this is the spark. Yeah. This is, you know, when you have a team like this, you need a spark sometime. This is a spark. You know, Westbrook has done this countless times throughout his career where he is the catalyst to a run, mm-hmm. you know, because of what something he does. And so he dunked it on all of Charlotte, basically, and tied the score at 66. Then the bottom fell completely out. The team could not score after that. Immediately after that, Charlotte went on an 8-0 run, and they outscored the Thunder 26-8 the rest of the way in the third quarter. Basically ball game. That was basically ball game. The bench was crappy. Dwight Howard was Orlando Dwight Howard.
Yeah, he went off.
I mean, and it's been kind of a resurgent season for him. But you know,
well, they're not asking him to do a lot in Charlotte.
Yeah, it's not
Charlotte's.
It's
they're a young team. Mm-hmm. They're in the rebuilding process.
Rebound and protect the paint.
Exactly. They're asking him to do the things that he normally does. Grab a couple rebounds. And, you know, play some defense.
Yeah, that's what he's good at. You know, I think Dwight Howard is he's a lesson in taking a big man that can do one thing very well, which his was rebounding, playing defense, so on and so forth, and trying to make him something that he was not, which is a solid offensive weapon. You know, he was good. Believe me, that finals run that Orlando had, he was great that season. I mean, you're talking about somebody that was probably an MVP candidate that year. But he was never meant to be Shaq. He was probably meant to be a rich man's DeAndre Jordan, which is what the apex of his career was, basically rich man DeAndre Jordan.
Well, I think that his biggest issue was the back injury.
Well, yeah, he had the back injury.
That killed him from his momentum from a Shaq-like player center, mm-hmm. a Shaq-like center.
Yeah.
Which he was early on in Orlando and stuff like that. He gets the back injury, and then the best you want to hope out of him is a more skilled offensive DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah.
Right? That back injury killed him, and it killed him for almost two seasons.
If not long. I mean, probably his career. Not necessarily his career has completely dropped off, but from that apex of, you know, baby Shaq, it has never gone past that. You know, Dwight Howard could not be stopped. And, we look at Adams, and we're like, yes, Adams is developing. Adams is still going to have trouble against a center here or there. And so he had a little bit of trouble against Dwight Howard. He couldn't stop him at all in the paint. And Charlotte went ahead, not necessarily a great three-point shooting team. They shot 52% from three. Oklahoma City shot 34.6. And once again, Oklahoma City shot 17-24 from the free throw line, which is 70.8%, which... If I'm looking, I believe that was the best we shot all week. So 70.8% was the best we shot all week. Okay. As far as the Oklahoma City Big Four, Steven Adams was 5 of 6 in that game. Carmelo Anthony was 5 of 6. I'm not gonna give you points. I just want to show you as far as like field goal shooting. Paul George was 7 of 14. Russell Westbrook was 10 of 22. If you were to look at that shot chart and look at 5 of 6 Adams, 5 of 6 Anthony, 7 of 14 George, 10 of 22 Westbrook, what would you have thought in that game?
Yeah, if you're just looking not at the score and just the shooting percentage, you were like, oh, they killed him.
They killed him. Yeah, I would have looked at that game.
So it's like 75-75, 50-50?
Yeah, I would have looked at that game and been like, oh, my goodness, here we go. This is, you know, this is what I was talking
this
about.
Must this must have been first half numbers. They didn't play the rest of the game.
I don't know. But, you know, even free throws, Paul George was 4 of 4. Westbrook was 9 of 9. I mean, this is what you expect from these guys. This is what you expect from this team. This is what you expect as far as shooting, shooting percentages go. This is what you expect from them. So... sadly, they wasted probably their best shooting game of the season collectively on a 13-point loss, which is just a microcosm of this season.
Snapping their 9-game losing streak.
Yeah, Charlotte had a 9-game losing streak coming in. And I know, you know, regardless of anything, whenever you're the team that's playing the team that's on a losing streak, you know, you are the target. You know, they're going
to
come out.
They have
all guns, you know, full guns blazing.
They got nothing to lose.
Exactly. They had nothing to lose. And Charlotte, for some reason, always gives us trouble in Oklahoma City. They gave us trouble last year. I think they gave us trouble the year before that in Oklahoma City. So, you know, we come out of that game thinking that we're going to do some things, and we end up losing by 13. So then we move on to a three-game road trip, East Coast swing. We go up to Indiana, then we went to Philly, and then New York. Ended up with New York tonight. So Indiana, of course, was the return game for Paul George.
His first game home, yeah.
Yeah, his first game back. And, of course, he was treated a lot like Kevin Durant was treating it, I mean, to a lesser degree. But every time he touched the ball, he was booed. When he came out from the locker room, he was booed on when he came onto the floor.
During warm-ups, there was, which kind of made no sense to me, a dude rocking a Paul George jersey with a sign that says, "We want Paul George back. Psych, you can keep him."
Yeah, I saw that one, and I saw the one that said, "What did it say? PG said PG wanted better teammates.
Yeah,
we wanted a better leader.
We wanted a better leader.
That one kind of that kind of had to hurt a little bit. I mean, I'm just as somebody that was there for
again,
seven seasons, and
you cannot hold up that sign and wear his jersey.
Yeah, that's a complete bro move right
that
there.
That can't be the only Indiana Pacers jersey you own.
Here's my thing. So I have a. Like the Indiana fan base is one that I have a kinship with them. So I've been to Indiana before. I've gone to one of their games it was about 5 or 6 seasons ago. So we're talking about, you know, this was whenever I think this was the season that Paul George was hurt. So that season, and so they weren't doing very well that year. So we went to a game. So I know this guy. He's a big-time Pacer fan over there. His name is El Pacero. And so this is back when they had Roy Hibbert. So they had an Area 55, like an area for fans that were dedicated for Roy Hibbert. And so anytime, you know, he would score, they put up the, you know, 2 fives, and they showed that area of the arena. So I was like, look, man, I'm in Indy for the day or for the week. I was there for the week. I said, can you give me some tickets to this game? So, of course, he got me some tickets to the game. He was like, look, we'll sit you up here with us. You guys got to cheer for us. Thankfully, we weren't playing the Thunder, so I'm like, yeah, whatever. I'll cheer for you guys. So I was there with two other guys. And so we got up there. We were cheering. The arena was empty. The arena was completely empty to the point where after the first quarter, you know, I said, hey, homie, I'm going to go ahead and go downstairs. So we went downstairs. We made it to the second level. We stayed there for about a quarter. By the end of the game, we were 3 rows back of the floor. I mean, I don't know what the ushers were thinking. I don't know if they cared. But we, you know, and it turned out to be a real good game. It turned out to be like a real close game that Indy ended up winning, I think. But everywhere around the court. So the arena is downtown, and so downtown you have one like kind of big mall, and so we went to that mall before the game looking for a jersey. I mean, we're looking for a shirt, Pacers, nothing, no Pacers shop. And I'm talking about the arena's right there, no Pacers shop. No store. We go to the Foot Locker. No Pacers gear. It was just Colts. It wasn't even football season. You know? This was, I mean, and the Colts weren't even that good. This wasn't Peyton Manning Colt. This was beginning of Andrew Luck career Colt. So they weren't even that good. And so the fan base of Indiana, I know they were wrecked by the Malice at the Palace, where they had that great season going. Mm-hmm. And then, bam, you know, it was taken away from them because
Artest
got suspended for the whole year. Steven Jackson got suspended for, I think,
19 games, I think it was, like, something like that.
I think Jermaine O'Neal got suspended for 19 games. Steven Jackson got suspended for 30 or something like that. But I know they were wary because of that. And so, you know, I was listening to some of the things about the game. This was their first sellout. So they had games where they played against Cleveland. And of course, they had a season opener. I don't know if they played against the Warriors yet. But, you know, they had a season opener, and they had a game against Cleveland. None of those games sold out. This was the first game that sold out. And so what I mean to say by that is the guys that are wearing the PG jerseys still, they probably haven't bought any of the new players' jerseys. I mean, who were you going to buy? Were you going to buy a Miles Turner jersey?
No, like, I mean, don't get me wrong. I get it. The Indiana doesn't have – I mean, but you can get an Oladipo jersey. He's going to be there for a little bit.
Yeah, no, I know.
But, that. I mean, you have, I would imagine, I myself, I've got a few jerseys. Look, I have Kevin Durant jerseys. I don't wear those anymore, but I still have them from when he was here. Uh-huh. I got them boxed up. No issues. I got a couple Russell Westbrook jerseys.
Right next to the fireplace.
I now have a Carmelo Anthony jersey. I'm going to get my Paul George jersey. Mm. I have a Steven Adams the Sunset Orange jersey. I have those, but I also have T-shirts.
Yeah.
I have stuff that just says Thunder Basketball, Oklahoma City. You're telling me
you could have worn that.
Hey, exactly. Yeah, you could have worn a
Pacer shirt.
You could have just worn a shirt that says Indiana.
Yeah.
Hell, I would have settled for Colts.
Indiana Colts. I think that's part of the problem right there.
Well, but I mean, at that point in time when you're trying to illustrate your point, uh-huh. something that just says Indianapolis, right?
Yeah.
But not, you can't hold up a sign.
And then have the dude's jersey.
Yeah, that's like
you can't hold up a cupcake.
That's
sign
like me,
and have a
yeah,
jersey
me
on.
Having a, holding up a cupcake and then rocking my Kevin Durant jersey.
Yeah, that's
like
that's,
it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. It's hypocritical in nature. You know, it's kind of ironic that you're holding up the thing, making fun of the player that whose jersey you're wearing.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I get that. So I mean, he got that treatment, and you know, good for Indiana fans.
Yeah, he was expecting
he
it.
He was expecting it. Yeah, exactly. You know, he didn't do him. You know. As an NBA superstar, you are never going to leave a situation and be cheered for it. You know,
nobody's going to be happy that you're leaving their team.
Exactly. I think the only time that I could have seen – I saw that happen pretty much was, you know, Jordan when he came back to Chicago as a member of the Wizards. Because, I mean, they knew that this was a – this was kind of – you know, the Jordan in D.C. when he played for the Wizards was a publicity stunt. You know, he had a little bit of ownership in the team. He sold that ownership in order to go ahead and kind of, you know, boost the Q rating for the team back up. And so he kind of got screwed whenever he got done playing. He thought he was going to go ahead and, you know, get back into that. But, yeah, that's the only time that I've ever seen a player go back somewhere and still be cheered by his, per se, you know, quote-unquote hometown team. So he got booed, came out. You know, the Thunder, for their credit, tried to go ahead and get him started. He was not having it this game. He was not. You know, you could tell it bothered him a little bit.
Yeah, offensively, he wasn't.
And by bother, I mean, I hate when they say that, like, oh, he's bothered by the atmosphere. And not necessarily that at every shot he's thinking about, oh, I miss my old teammates, or, hey, yeah. That's the security guy that I used to talk to. All the-. No, it's
there's
nothing to
Jim.
Do with, yeah, exactly. It's nothing to do with that. It's just the fact that you know that every eye is looking at you with a little bit of hate and a little bit of dislike and a little bit of remorsefulness and a little bit of just thinking about the past. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
You know, that's all there. And so not everybody can take that and come out and give you an FU performance like, say, Kevin Durant did whenever he first stepped onto Oklahoma City and did what he did against us last year. So, you know, he did okay. He scored 12 points. He shot, what was it, 4 of 14? Was it 3 of 14? He contributed in other ways, and you know, at the end of the game, whenever we needed it most, he got that steal, and sunk the two free throws. So
yeah, defensively, he played great.
Yeah, he did a great job.
Offensively, it wasn't there, which you know, it could have been any team really, because that's just how they're playing. One night it's there, the other night this nowhere to be found, yeah. And it just so happened that on this night it was Indy, and so. Yeah, maybe, you know, maybe seeing some of those signs, maybe, you know, you can be prepared for the boos, and then when you actually get the boos, you react a little bit differently. And, yeah. You know, for a split second there, this is a guy who, you know, poured his hard work, sweat, tears, his broken
ankle
for this team. That's probably going to get to you. No, mm-hmm. I mean, don't get me wrong. I recently just changed jobs, and I was there for 6 years. And so now I have my new job and I have new coworkers, which I've already known, and I still work in the same building. But, you know, when you see your old team doing the things that you used to do, you know, it feels weird at first.
So when you walk by, do they boo you as you walk by?
No, they don't boo me because they still use the vast knowledge that I have.
Oh, watch out.
I haven't reached that point yet. I haven't reached, you know, they haven't gotten everything out of me yet to where they're like, boo, we don't need you anymore.
So Oklahoma City went on to win that game 100-95. It was basically a back-and-forth affair until the middle of the third quarter. Then the Thunder kind of took over. But, of course, as is par for this team, Indiana found some way to go ahead and make it very competitive at the end. So it was, what was it, a one-point game late in that game?
Yeah.
But, you know, OKC, as they have had a habit of doing lately, found a way to hang on and come out with the win. So Paul George did not perform very well offensively, but he had a stellar performance on the defensive end on Oladipo a lot of the night. So Oladipo, who has been, you know, setting the NBA on fire.
Killing it. He had 44 season. The game before this one.
Yeah, he shot, what was it, like, he didn't shoot very, like 6 of 18. I mean, like,
yeah, he didn't have a great shooting night.
Like 9 of 27, something like that. So, yeah, so he didn't shoot very well. Even at the end of the game, he basically said, look, this season I haven't been guarded like Paul George guarded me. And that's something that Oladipo is going to have to get used to if he's going to take that mantle and become the man in Indiana, like he looks like he's going to become. Melo was very, you know, Melo was good, was okay. He was very spotty on defense at the end of the game, which allowed Indiana to make a comeback. He was, you know, they were picking on him, basically.
I think Miles Turner, he was on Miles Turner, right?
Yeah, and they were Miles picking on him. Turner they was were just... doing a pick and roll and putting, basically, Oladipo got onto Anthony and, you know, had his way with him, basically. Yeah. Or he would find Turner on the roll and, you know, or to, no, it wasn't Turner. It was Thad Young.
Oh, yeah, Thaddeus. Yeah. To include one time where they on a switch, they completely left Victor Oladipo open.
Yeah, and he missed
drove it right into the lane.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that one.
No. The one where literally both defenders go with, I want to say it was Turner that set the screen, and Oladipo just walks right up to the rim and lays it up.
Yeah, but I mean, we came out with a W. We came out with the win. Again, another close game. It did not have to be close, but it is what it is. So Indiana shot 35.5 from three. We shot 44.8. Surprisingly, Oklahoma City just allowed 6 free throws in that game to Indiana. That's it. You know, that's when you're talking about an NBA game. If you just allow 6 free throws, that's pretty good defense right there. And then we shot 15-24 from the free throw line, which was 62.5%. So as far as Oklahoma's big four, Steven Adams was dominant that game. He was basically the reason we won. So he was 11-16, had 23 points, 13 rebounds. Carmelo Anthony, 4 of 14, 2 of 3 from 3, 12 points, 5 rebounds. Paul George, 3 of 14, 2 of 7 from 3 for 12 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 steals. And then Russ had one of those weird triple-doubles that he's been having this year where very low on points, so 10 points, 17 rebounds, 12 assists. He shot 3 of 17, and as far as free throws, was 3 of 7. So we move on to the Philly game.
Before we do that, did you see what Oladipo did to endear himself to the city?
What did he do? Oh,
the very next night?
Oh, you're talking Thursday night football? At the Colts game?
Yeah, at the Colts game.
Yeah.
Rocking an Adam Vinatieri jersey.
And then he did his little, like, I guess his new thing is, this is my town.
Yeah.
This is
he did the traditional, this is my city.
Yeah, this is my city.
Point to the ground kind of movement.
And, you know,
and then he banged the iron of I'm guessing that's an Indianapolis Colts thing.
Yeah.
They had, like, you know, the little iron thing, and he pounded on it a couple times before the game.
You know, kind of sidebar, I'm completely happy for Victor Oladipo. I'm totally happy for him. You know, I usually, like, if a guy is not on the team anymore and he's, you know, succeeding, I'm kind of, like, low-key hating
salty
on them. Yeah, exactly. Like, why the hell didn't you do this while you were here? If you did this while you were here, you probably would not be on another team right about now. But for Oladipo, I don't know. He came in last year. He came in last year thinking, I'm going to get to play with Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. And then Durant, of course, pulled the rug out from the entire team, the entire NBA, basically, and went to Golden State. So he came in, he was like, I'm going to do my best. I'm going to do whatever this team needs. And he changed his game around, not necessarily to his benefit. You know, he became a spot-up shooter. And he kind of, I'm not going to say he excelled in that role, but he didn't do horrible in that role. And so, you know, the season progressed. He went to the playoffs for the first time. It did not go very well for him in the playoffs. Shot horribly. But he came out, he came out this offseason. He was transforming his body. He was doing something different. He was,
He put on some muscle. He got, I saw photos on Instagram, stuff like that. Dude got jacked.
Oh, I know, man. He's like, the whole thing about, 3 weeks later, and he looks like, you know, he's an Olympic god, you know. Yeah, I was a little bit worried that they were going to check his urine or his blood and be like, oh, this guy's doping. This guy's doing something. But apparently there's something going on. You know, there's some off-season program that's going on that, you know, he did that. What's the guy from L.A., the Lakers? Randall, Julius Randle did that. And, you know, Julius Randle's always been kind of like a big old, like not a chubby guy, but he's got NBA fat on him. Yeah. You know, he's got that NBA
like
fat.
Like a Marcus Smart kind of dude who's not,
yeah, just
not
thick.
Necessarily chubby, but, you know.
Just naturally thick. Just, yeah. It's one of those guys that once he's done playing, he's going to balloon up to about, you know, 300,
yeah, if they don't stay on it.
Exactly. But he did it, and he came out looking, you know, real jacked also. So, I mean, props to him. Good job to him. I mean, I know if he would have stayed on this team, I think he would have improved on the season from last year. And I think he would have been more the player that we were expecting. Kind of like, you know, I don't want to say a Westbrook clone, but somebody that plays a lot like him with maybe a little bit of a better outside shot. So props to him. I hope he continues this. And I hope he becomes the man in Indianapolis and, you know, pushes them to be the elite in, you know, one of the elites in the East. And same thing with Sabonis. Sabonis, you know, looks like he's finally playing his natural position, which is basically a small ball five that plays inside a lot of the time.
You know, he's basically a smaller version of his daddy.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, and we wanted to make him into, you know, Serge Ibaka, and he wasn't ready for that. You know, this is a rookie that was coming in that shot maybe two or three three-pointers in his whole career in Gonzaga, and we wanted him to go out there and shoot two or three threes per game, yeah. You know? So, you know, good for them. Good for them. I'm glad for them. But I would make that trade 100 times out of 100 times.
Oh, yeah. You definitely pull the trigger on that.
You have to pull the trigger on that. Okay? So we move on to Philly. Excuse me. So Philly, crazy game. Probably the craziest game of the NBA season.
A game that I had been telling you all week I was nervous about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. I mean, Philly, you know, they are.
The process is working.
They're learning how to win. Yeah. The process is working. They're learning how to win. And they've got two bona fide guys that can be studs, straight just like all-time studs, not just, you know, studs for this season. These guys, if they stay healthy, Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, if they stay healthy, they can become become one of the best duos in an NBA by next season.
And let's be honest, based on the, 30-plus games this season,
mm-hmm.
one of these players is somebody you don't want to be on the other side of. In social media.
No, yeah. And troll. That's King Troll.
JoJo.
JoJo is King Troll,
JoJo, you know, is having fun, and he's...
Troll Embiid.
He is putting people on blast once he beats them, or, you know, him and Kat have had several interactions going back and forth. You know, he's not afraid to wave people off the court when they foul out or when he gets them out of the game. And he'll let you know on social media right after. So he's definitely somebody you don't want to be on the opposite end of.
But he kind of forgot that kind of a low-key King Troll of the NBA is Russell Westbrook.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
You know, as far as like...
That's not a guy you want to piss off.
As far as subtle messages here and there, and as far as, you know, things that you do on the court, and he's going to tell you that he just did that to you on the court. That's Westbrook all the way through. You know, Westbrook plays psychological games like that. So crazy game. Like I said, crazy game. We had, you know, we were in control for most of the game. But was it like we never went up by like 12, you know, 13 points.
It was an uneasy control of the game.
Yeah, we'd have a 7-point lead. Then they get it down to about four. Then we go on a nice little 6-0 run. And then they, you know, so it was back and forth. J.J. Redick. Every time we seemed like we were going to go ahead and pull away, he would go ahead and hit a couple threes.
He was J.J. Redick.
He was J.J. Redick. Robert Covington did horrible in this game. Like, I know he got a nice little contract, and I know he is this new NBA's, you know, one of those guys that can shoot threes and defend. He's long defender. But, man, at one point in that game, I don't even know what it is, how he finished, but he was 3 of 15 from 3. Not 3 of 15 from the field, 3 of 15 from 3. I mean, the guy was just jacking it up, and he was missing a lot. So, but, yeah, so back-and-forth affair, and then we get to about 5.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and we're up by 11. We did not score the rest of the way. And Philly went ahead and scored the 11 points that they needed to score to tie the game up, and we went into overtime. So, first overtime, Philly had a 5-point lead with 1:21 left in the first quarter. But then The Thunder did those that thing that they do where they come back and they hit a three and Westbrook, you know, hit a layup and we prevented them from scoring. And so we headed to a second overtime. So in that first overtime, at the end of the first overtime, Joel Embiid had a shot to win the game, basically. And so he got the pass and he did the whole thing where like he kind of pump faked and then he jumped into the defender, which was Steven Adams, and he missed the shot, but kind of knocked Adams in the face.
He went up in a shooting motion and kind of basically hit Adams with
an elbow or shoulder,
uppercut elbow.
Yeah.
You know, in his natural shooting motion to bring the ball.
So basically a move that if one of the Oklahoma City Thunder players would have done it, they would have been kicked out of the game, flagrant two, things of that nature.
Yes.
Yeah. So Joel Embiid, big old 7'2" Joel Embiid did that to another human being.
To another 7-footer.
Yeah, and nothing gets called at all. Like, this is like end of 2-minute report type thing. You look at it, and this should have been something that the NBA would have been like, hey, that should have been called as a foul, as an offensive foul. But it wasn't. It wasn't called. Missed the shot. Second overtime. Second overtime was more of like a back-and-forth affair. Ended up tied again. In the second overtime, Andre Robertson had an opportunity to win the game with a bunny, and he missed the bunny because he's Andre Robertson.
Well, he had two opportunities.
And he got hit. I mean, I know he got hit, but I mean, when you're that close to the basket, regardless if you get hit or not, he wasn't, you know, he got hit, but he wasn't, you know, he wasn't blasted. It wasn't something like, oh, crap, you know, they should have called a foul. He got hit. Yeah, he got hit on the head, but he should have made that.
He had two opportunities. He had that little two-footer. Clearly gave up the ball because he had wanted nothing to do with it to a trailing Westbrook, who then gave it right back to him, and then he goes for the up and under on the glass, gets bumped, and, you know, rims out.
That was in the third overtime. That one was in the third overtime.
No, the third overtime is where he makes that up and under.
Yeah, there we go, yeah.
It's same play in both second and third.
But, yeah, he's Andre Robertson. I love the guy, man. I love him. I love his moxie. I love – you know, I love what he brings to the team. As far as like, I love his locker room presence. They love him, but man, he can be very frustrating as an offensive player out there. Whenever you need people that can make shots, you know.
To his credit, though, he gets bumped and the shot. It wasn't one of those shots that you're like, what the hell? Like he just. I mean, I watched it again.
Yeah.
A decent up and under that just he doesn't get the right roll, right? Yeah. Leading up to that, where he has the ball in the little two footer, where he just the little teardrop, and that ends the game, and he clearly passes back. That, you know, that gets you to scratch your head. You're like, what? The, you know, like you need somebody like you're saying that wants to score the ball. That's not afraid of the ball in that moment. To his credit, he recovers in the third overtime. Same play, makes it this time. And, you know, the Thunder win the game. But
so
defensively,
so talking about, so
ridiculous.
Talking about, so talking about, I'm sorry, sidebar real quick.
Sidebar.
So talking about wanting to win, the guys that want to win the game.
Yes.
So at the end of the game, Paul George had a chance to win it with a three-pointer.
The transition, or yeah, the top of the key three.
Top of the key three. Missed it badly. He missed it badly. And so I tweeted out, he's now 0-17 on game-winning field goal attempts.
Yeah.
And everybody tweeted back to me was that Gatorade commercial where he shoots it and he makes it and he goes, ball game.
Oh, the Gatorade.
It was so hilarious that people, like, immediately, like, people I don't even follow. Like, I don't even, like, I'm pretty sure other people retweeted it and then their followers looked at that and they were, you know, tweeting. Ball game.
Yeah. The new G2 commercials with the new flavors. Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious. But yeah, he's 0-17 in his career on game winning field goal attempts.
Yeah.
So
at this point, Steven Adams picks up
his foul,
five and six within the fourth quarter and overtime.
Yeah. So he picks up in the third overtime, he picked up the sixth foul. Yeah.
Was it the third? I thought he got picked it up in the second overtime.
No, it was it was early. It was early on in the third overtime. So he picks it up, and then what does Joel Embiid do?
He waves him by off the court.
Yeah, by off the court, and that's fine. So Patrick
comes which is what he does.
Yeah, he had a great game. As far as you know, Oklahoma City. I know he played against Oklahoma City last year in the opener, but as far as introduction to this Joel Embiid, this guy that's supposed to be basically dominating the league here in a couple years if he stays healthy. He dominated that game.
Yeah, he played a hell of a game.
No. He played a good game. I thought Adams, as far as the stats show, probably didn't play that well of a game. He did a great job on him. He made him work for everything that he got. And I think he ended up with what, 34 points or something like that.
Joel Embiid, yeah.
Yeah, but he had to work very hard for those, and he's a great free throw shooting big man. Yeah. And that's so important to have in this league. If you're going to be a big man, you're going to get fouled a lot, make your free throws. And he does.
Yeah, he had a career high 47 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a great game, and you could tell by the third overtime. I mean, everybody was winded. Russell Westbrook had played 52 minutes.
No, Russell Westbrook doesn't get winded.
No, he grinds to the end. But Joel Embiid, you could tell by the end, you know, starting to get to him, but
And
he makes his free throws. Ben Simmons had a hell of a game, but I think
he had an okay game.
I think defensively we did well against him.
I think Ben Simmons is, I wouldn't say he's hitting the wall, but he's starting to it's one of two things. He's starting to hit the wall a little bit, and NBA teams are starting to have scouting reports on him big time. And so they know that he can't hit the outside shot, so they're playing off of him. And so, you know, teams are learning. So this is the next evolution in his career to see how he counters that. But, okay, so Adams fouls out the game. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, oh, crap. Embiid's about to go off.
Yep.
You know, he's about to either, you know, rack up fouls like it's nothing, or he's going to go ahead and start, you know, racking it up inside. Patrick Patterson comes in.
Who hadn't played since, like, the third quarter, I think.
He does a good job on him. Patrick Patterson does a real good job on him. And we're going to talk about Patrick Patterson here in a little bit, but does a real good job on him. And Westbrook basically takes over in that third overtime period. So Westbrook, for the third overtime, he had 6 points, 7 rebounds, and 1 assist. So he took over. He did the coast-to-coast dunk again in the third overtime after playing, you know, 48 minutes.
40-something minutes, yeah.
You know, so the guy is incredible. The guy, as far as his stamina, as far as not fatiguing on the court, it's incredible, man. Pro sports are the athletes of the athletes. Like, these are the top of the line
guys. That's the 1%.
Yeah, and this guy is the 1% of the 1%, as far as his stamina, as far as not getting tired out there on the court, as far as mind over matter when it comes to being tired. So that was amazing. So they end up winning. And so as they win, as they're getting off the court, what does Russell Westbrook do to Joel Embiid as he's walking, you know, as they're walking to the opposite?
He waves him bye off the court.
He says bye.
And then he says go home.
With a big old smile on his face. Yeah, go home. Bye. Go home. You know. So great. That's awesome. I love seeing that. And I love seeing the back and forth between NBA. Because these guys are all friends. I don't care what they say. But when they're on the court, they're not friends.
But I tell you what. There was a point in that third overtime. So can I tell you a trend that I've noticed?
Okay.
Late in games, mm-hmm. even though we're more aggressive to the basket, we're not getting the calls.
We're not.
We're just not. Especially in this Philly game, mm-hmm. every call went against us. They put more time on the clock because they called a timeout that, you know, mm-hmm. that would have ended the game. A couple games ago, they reversed what clearly was a charge.
That was the indie game, right?
Was that the indie game?
I think it was.
Yeah, they reversed it into a shooting foul for the other player.
Which I
didn't even know was possible.
I still don't understand that because if they're going to review a charge call like that, I thought that the only thing that they could review was to see whether the person's foot was in the restricted zone. And Josh Huestis' feet were clearly outside of the zone. But then they go ahead and say that he was not in a defensive position.
Yeah.
Like covering my ball so that somebody doesn't hit me as they're running into me. That's not a defensive position. Well, I mean, what are they talking about?
The referee came over and talked to Doris Burke during the game and told her that they had felt that Josh Huestis had not established himself as a defender yet when the offensive player ran into him.
I didn't know they could review that. I thought... The call on the floor is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about the only thing that they could review when it comes to a charge like that is feet in the restricted zone. That was just weird to me. And that's one of those things where you look at it and you're like, are you freaking serious? Like, yeah. Here goes another thing. The referees not being very consistent, not being very, you know, up front. And, you know, like, what is this?
It's crazy. And
literally, Indiana fans, if you would have just left that call as it is, they would have been like, oh, okay. sounds about right. It's a call against us, but sounds about right. Yeah. You know, it's just, yeah, that play was weird.
So, Philly calls a timeout. Uh-huh. It allows them to bring the ball up to the three quarters part of the court. And they've got maybe, you know, 2-3 seconds left on the clock.
Mm-hmm.
They get the ball in to Redick. They try to do a screen with Joel Embiid. Doesn't go through, so they're screening from left to right.
Uh-huh.
He comes back from right to left, and it is able to get through the screen, and mm-hmm. he's wide open. I was like, oh, hell, game over.
Yeah.
Game over. I mean, he's got literally maybe a foot and a half space mm-hmm. between him and the defender.
That's all he
and
needs.
The defender, and they're on a switch, which is Patrick Patterson, and he's slow to rotate over. And I was like, as soon as I saw that, I said, forget it, it's over.
Yeah.
To our, you know, benefit, Patrick Patterson
recovered very nicely.
Recovers well, blocks a shot, and then the rest is history.
Yeah.
But I tell you, as soon as I saw J.J. Redick coming through off that second screen and he was cleared, I said, forget it, it's over.
J.J. Redick was a guy that I felt that if the Thunder could have somehow finagled him during the Westbrook-Durant era, would have just helped this team immensely. You know, J.J. Redick is what we would like Alex Abrines to become, what we wanted, you know, maybe Alex, you know, Anthony Morrow to provide to us when he came off the bench. You know,
yeah,
stuff
what
like
we
that.
Thought Kyle Singler might be able to do when we first got him.
Yeah, let's say middle class, poor man,
yeah,
J.J. Redick.
Poor man, J.J. Redick. A guy that can knock down at least three or four three-pointers a night.
Not even that much. I mean, but like, if I'm looking at Kyle, I'm saying, give me 1.5 three-pointers a night, and I'm good to go. You know, but he's back to being on the bench. Kyle Singler.
Well, I think we're 2-1 with him in the lineup.
I have no idea.
So
we win that game again. We shot 10 of 19 from the free throw line. We're leaving money on the table. We're leaving things, you know, we're leaving points on the board that could help us out immensely. Like 10 of 19. Even if we go 15 of 19. That's 4 extra points somewhere in there that we probably don't need to go into 3 overtimes to win. It's, you know, we'll get into that later. The whole free throw thing is kind of something that.
Well, and again, like I've been noticing for, it's not like we're not getting those extra calls in crunch time to give us those extra opportunities. So we have to take what we can get now until mm-hmm. we can get right and tight. And, because we ain't getting help from the league anytime soon.
No, we're not. No. Okay, so so we win that game. So here's some stats from that game. There we go. So Philly shot 28.3 from 3. We shot 42.9. You know, that's something that whenever I look at stats and I look at what the other team shot from 3 as compared to us, usually if they're in the 40s, we're struggling that game. You know, that's a game that – but they shot only 28.3, and, you know, it was still a struggle in the game. But looking at the stats, just the big stat I want to focus on is minutes. So Adams played 50 minutes. Carmelo Anthony played 47 minutes. Paul George, 45. Russell Westbrook, 52. We were going to hop on a plane in the evening – cold evening, so they had to defrost. You know, they had to go ahead and defrost the
runway.
The runway for the airplane. Apparently, from what I was hearing, when they got into New York, there was a pedestrian car accident that kind of delayed them like 30 minutes, 40 minutes from getting to their hotel. And so these guys just got done playing 50 plus minutes, and they're playing the next night. So I automatically chalked it up as a loss, and it basically was a loss. So we went into New York, we were without Steven Adams because he suffered a concussion on that Embiid play, or concussion-like symptoms on that Embiid play. So he's in the NBA's concussion protocol. And so, you know, it was back and forth in the first half, the first part of the third quarters. It was tied at 56 with 7:43 left. And then you can tell from that point on, New York had much fresher legs than we did. So New York was without Kristaps Porzingis. They were without Tim Hardaway Jr. It didn't matter. Like, there's a couple hustle stats that I always look at, and one of them is 3 points attempt, 3 point shots attempted, and 3 point shots made. And we were leaving the man open all the time as far as switching defense, our pick and roll defense. It wasn't there. Our legs weren't there. And New York completely took advantage of that. They shot 60.9% from three in this game.
Ron Baker drilled a couple back-to-back in the fourth. Yeah. And Michael Beasley went off for 30 points.
Yeah,
Let me repeat that. Michael Beasley went off for 30 points against us.
Yeah, he's – you know, every time I look at Michael Beasley and he has games like that, it's just like, you know, what could have been if this guy would have actually, I don't know, like he seems like a head case. He's a head case big time. But he's also a guy that could have been an offensive savant. He could have been somebody that at 6'10", as athletic as he is, as, you know, if he worked on his craft, he could have had a great shot. You know, he was great in this game shooting. You know, what could have been with this guy? You know, and then what still can be. I mean, this guy could still, you know, get on a team and, you know, be the assassin off the bench, you know.
And he's coming off the bench mostly for the New York.
Not for the Brooklyn, the New York.
For the Knicks. And on Tuesday when they played the Lakers on national TV, Michael Beasley had 1 point in the fourth quarter and then erupted for 12 in overtime to help him win that game.
He's that kind of guy.
He's a
bigger version of like Eric Gordon, a bigger version of Jamal Crawford, Lou Williams, guys that can just, you know, they have gifts, they have, you know, they have ability, but they never were ever able to put it all together to be a complete player, but now they're just, they're mercenaries out there.
He's one of those guys that I would argue would have benefited from another year in college.
Yeah, he would have. I mean, he would have benefited definitely from another year at K-State, especially under the tutelage of Bob Huggins, was his coach over there at K-State. I don't know if that was a season high for him, but I know he killed us. Anytime we were trying to come back, you know, it seems like he just dribbled it down and did a little 15-foot fadeaway on us.
Melo was covering him most of the night, was he not?
Yeah, Melo, Jeremy Grant.
It's kind of a tough cover for Melo. I mean, yeah, Michael Beasley's a little bit more spring in a step than Carmelo, but you knew it was coming. I mean, you expected somebody to go off in this game for the reasons that we stated before. All these guys just played a triple overtime game the night before. So you know at some point in time, one guy was going to go off. You just didn't expect it to be Michael Beasley.
Yeah. Oh, I know. So, you know, when you come into a game after a triple overtime game and you play the next game, it's either you put the game away early or you know it's going to be a battle and your legs aren't going to be there. And that's what happened to the Thunder this game. They eventually lost 111-96. You know, the guys, as far as Adams didn't play, Anthony had 12 points on 5 of 18 shooting on his, you know, in his homecoming back to New York. And they actually, you know, New York fans are a different breed. And so they really understand that even though Carmelo,
the situation
wasn't Paul George. Fault. Yeah. It wasn't, Melo was there for six seasons, I think. Mm-hmm. Three of those seasons were good. The first three seasons,
they won a series.
Exactly. The last three seasons, it was a sabotage. You know, there was a saboteur within the front office that was completely trying to get him off the team as much as possible.
Yeah,
and that no trade clause bothered Phil Jackson to no end.
Which made no sense because he was the guy that gave it to him.
Exactly, yeah. He gave it to him thinking that, I don't know what he thought.
I don't know why he gave it to him, but that no trade clause bothered him. That contract bothered him. And you could tell you obviously had to know that the skills were whittling when you gave him that contract and you gave him a no trade clause and the man wasn't budging. You know, he wanted to be a New York Knick.
Yeah, for those
you know, he forced his way on to the New York Knicks, basically gutting the whole team. You know, losing players like Wilson Chandler and Danilo Gallinari in the trade and stuff like that. Yeah. And they were left with what they were, but you know, he had a few good years in New York. And the reason he's not a Knick now is not his fault. It is literally James Dolan,
Phil Jackson,
those guys in there. Yeah. So to their credit, the organization has a class act. They did an intro video for Carmelo Anthony, thanking him for support, and they gave him the hometown entrance.
Yeah, to the Knicks fans' credit, you know, they gave him a standing ovation. And beginning of the game, when he first got the ball and he made the first shot, they cheered. Yep. They cheered like he was shooting it for them.
And then when they lost the game and he was leaving, they booed.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So the Knicks are the Knicks. Let's not forget.
I love New York fans.
Let's not forget where they're at. Yeah, okay. Let's not forget who they are.
You know, New York fans are so intelligent. New York fans, LA fans, Boston fans, as far as basketball fans, very intelligent. Like if a guy from the other team is going off and he's putting on a great performance, they will clap. They will go ahead and be like, "Hey, great job."
Well, I saw the list of celebrities. There's always going to be celebrities in New York, but long list of celebrities. You had Emily Ratajkowicz, Katie Holmes was there. Yeah, Ansel Elgort was there.
Gesundheit, once again.
Michael J. Fox, Chris Rock.
Who's Ansel Elgort?
He's the guy that played in The Fault Between Our Stars. The Fault Between Our Stars, the movie where they were both dying. They were both cancer patients and they fell in love together and whatnot. He's also in one of those teenage movie series thingies. I just can't think of which one right now. So he's an up and comer.
So I haven't seen it.
Probably not. Well, I mean, you have teenage daughters. I'm sure you've seen it. You just didn't realize that was
him. They're not there yet. I have one teenage daughter. She's not there yet
You know, Michael J. Fox, Chris Rock. I'm sure.
But you know,
if I have a teenage daughter,
that means you have a teenage niece. You do realize that, right?
Well, yeah, I do understand that. But see, the responsibilities that I have and you have are different. So, you know, I will encourage that to some extent.
Yeah.
Because I don't have to deal with the repercussions afterwards.
That's very true.
You know, so to some extent, I see things a little bit differently.
So, getting back onto the basketball. So 2-2 week. Nothing too bad, nothing too great.
Not great, nothing bad.
Exactly.
Here's the good news. Hopefully, the next seven out of the next eight games are at home.
Yes. Yeah.
So you would hope that you can
string something together,
build some momentum leading into the Christmas Day game, which is going to be against Houston.
And then we play, I think, Utah two times during that time, right. And they're going to be without Rudy Gobert.
Which he's out for a month. Mm-hmm. So, Houston game, I'm not worried about.
Okay.
And here's what I'm talking about. I'm not worried about us as a team.
Uh-huh.
Because for whatever reason, Houston, I think, is going to get that same Golden State Warrior treatment.
Yeah.
Everything's going to flow playing against Houston. We might not win the game.
Mm-hmm.
But it won't be for lack of X, Y, or Z, right?
It's like I said with this team. This team is a team that, if you are an established veteran team that have a style of play, the Thunder would do a good job against you as far as defensively and as far as offensively. If you are a young team that does not necessarily have an established identity, that's just run and gun type style like Brooklyn was, like, the Thunder are going to struggle against that because they're just older. They're older, and the young legs can sometimes beat them, you know? So the Houston game, doesn't really worry me that much. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not necessarily going to go out on a limb and put money on us winning Houston, but the teams that we're coming for, which are Houston and Golden State, there's no need for – you don't have to get yourself up for that game. No. All of that is already built into that game itself. So I expect them to come out and play with the full potential that we expected them to play this season.
Yeah, I agree.
This season. So I'm not worried about the Houston game. It's these other games in between. We play
Denver, Utah twice.
Denver on Monday, Utah on Wednesday. Mm.
Those are big, you know, as much as we look at them, we go, oh, it's just Denver. Those are huge games because those guys are doing pretty good within our division. And, you know, our division is one of the tougher divisions in the league.
But you're helped by Utah losing Rudy Gobert for a week. Mm-hmm. So you have the Hawks on Friday and then the Jazz again on Saturday. And then Christmas Day, of course, you have Houston. And then you have the Raptors on Wednesday and the Bucks on Friday.
And then we end the year with Dallas, you know, the team that beat us by 15 points in Dallas.
So, you know.
It's winnable games. They are winnable games. And if the Thunder can get their crap together, they should be able to pull off a nice little, you know, how many games do we have? That's 4, 7, 8.
That's 8 games.
So a nice little 6-2 stretch.
6-2, 7-1 potentially.
That's not beyond the realm of possible. You know, it's possible with the talent that we have on this team to do that. Now, whether we can get out of our heads and actually get it done, that becomes the next question. We're doing this. You know, was it 7 of the next 8 are all at home?
Utah on Saturday is the away game.
You're supposed to be a good team. You know, you're supposed to win those home games. So we'll see what this team does these next 2 weeks.
If we were to go to 6-2, that would put us at 20-17.
Yeah, and that's good. It's good.
So three games above 500.
Looking at January might be a little bit easier than December was. So if we can take these next two, this next month and a half and take care of the business that we're supposed to take care of, we might be pretty good heading into February and the stretch run there in March and April. So I kind of want to look back at the week that was, and look at the good, the bad, and the ugly. So to me, hold on 1 second. To me, the good was Patrick Patterson's emergence. I mean, the guy looks like the guy that we thought we were going to get when we signed him.
He's finally getting into game shape.
He's getting into game shape, number one. Number two, I think he's finding his way to that corner. The corner three was his shot, and I don't know why he was shooting these elbow threes. I don't know why he was shooting these top. No, his shot is the corner three. Get your butt there. Do what you got to do to get there and shoot that three. And, the last couple games he's made multiple three-point shots. So he's just doing good. He's doing great. He had that block against Philly. He's given us what we need, what we need to succeed, off the bench. The bad. Did you see those new city jerseys?
I did see those the new city jerseys. So the 2K league. Mm-hmm. Last time we had a 2K league, it turned out to be the statement jerseys that the Thunder are wearing now. And so these new city jerseys will basically have the city that they play for, their nicknames on them. Mm-hmm. So the Warriors say the Bay. Cleveland says the Land, although I don't know who the hell calls Cleveland the Land except for the Cavs.
I don't know.
And Oklahoma City says OKC, and then the blue and orange stripes that run through our logo.
The shield,
The shield will run underneath the OKC lettering, and it is a black jersey from what I can tell.
It's black?
The photo's grainy.
It looks grayish.
So it's grayish, so that's why I assume that it might be a black jersey. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard to sell. Atlanta says Atlanta.
Dude, so I guess they showed some of them.
They showed almost all the teams.
The Magic ones look horrible.
I didn't see those.
Like the Magic ones, it looks like something an Orlando Magic dancer would wear. Like it's all sparkly, and it says, I don't know if it says Magic or ORL or whatever. But yeah, it looks bad.
So Dallas is Dallas. What's crazy? Dallas has a throwback color scheme to theirs. Mm-hmm. So do you remember the old Mavericks when they had the green and they had the cowboy hat? So theirs is black with blue lettering trimmed in that neon green in that high.
Okay.
So it kind of looks like Minnesota's new color scheme.
I got you.
There says Dal, D-A-L. The Nuggets have their new old pickaxe and mountaintop jersey. Detroit says Motor City. They've got some good looking ones in here, but the OKC one. So I take it by you having it as the ugly, you are not a fan.
As far as first look, I'm not a fan. No, I don't know. I figured you could have done a little bit more with the city jersey. I don't know. It looks gray. It looks bland.
I'm assuming that's supposed to be either black or a dark, dark blue like the statement jerseys are.
I don't know. I don't know. I do know that. Whenever somebody takes a screenshot or something like that, the color can be distorted. Because even the statement jersey looked different than what it does in actual real life, on a screen.
So Houston's rocking the Chinese lettering?
I guess Yao Ming's impact was
The Pacers are rocking the old Pacers down the side. Clippers, the Clippers jersey actually looks like a Thunder jersey.
Yeah,
it is blue with orange trim and white around the white lettering.
It's just like I see things like that. I'm like, why didn't they do that for us? You know what? Why do we get this just like weird grayish bland with the stripes that go into our shield logo? I don't know. I just, you know, it's like somebody said to me on Twitter. They were like, you know, I said to them, I said, you know, I just don't think, you know, with 10 years worth of history and just a regular white home jersey and a regular blue home, blue road jersey that we had for 9 of those 10 years, I don't think that Nike necessarily had too much to work off of as far as tradition for the Thunder. So they just kind of had to make something up and see if it works out.
Kind of interesting ones. The Knicks have like a shield.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to guess the firefighter shield.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, that looks nice.
I think that looks pretty cool. New Orleans has that old school purple and it says NOLA.
The jazz looking thing.
Yeah, it says NOLA on there. So yeah, the Oklahoma City one.
It just leaves a little to be desired.
It's weird. I feel like this would be a jersey that Tony the Tiger wears with like the stripes underneath it.
Like even if it's black or dark blue, it would still leave a little bit more to be desired.
I think. Here's the one thing I do like about it. They finally highlight the yellow in the logo.
Yeah.
Yellow's my favorite color. And I'm kind of saddened that we don't do more with the yellow.
Mm-hmm.
But the yellow, the white lettering in the OKC and the numbers are trimmed in yellow. So I will be excited. I'm kind of still holding judgment until I actually see them. Either they do another special and release the jerseys. Or we actually get a better look of it because the photo is grainy, so it's hard to tell. I am looking at the Orlando Magic one.
It's and,
horrible. Damn.
It looks like some crap that Disney made up and was like, hey.
Well, Disney is the sponsor on the jersey, so.
I mean, they look bad.
It just
looks like If You Wish Upon a Star. Like, if you were to put If You Wish Upon a Star onto a jersey, that's what it would look like.
Do you remember the old NBC commercials, The More You Know?
Yeah, there you go.
This seems like the polo that they would give out to the employees.
Yeah, somehow LeVar Burton's going to come out wearing that jersey and telling me what I need to know about life.
Now, I saw this one, and I don't understand. So, Philadelphia now wears jerseys that say Philla.
Mm-hmm.
So, their alternate jersey has Philla on there in, like, a cursive handwriting. Why does it not say Philly? I don't know about you, but I've never heard Philadelphia referred to as Philla.
I mean, I know they're, I think their old school jerseys had Philla on there. Like, I tend to remember, like the old school jerseys that Iverson used to wear had Philla on.
Right,
there.
The
red and white.
You already have a jersey that says Philla. Your opportunity? This is called the city, right? They're city jerseys. Why doesn't it not say Philly?
Or just if you want to get crazy, put like brotherly love on there somewhere.
Yeah,
some crap like that.
And then here's the Suns one says Los Suns.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
So, have you seen Portland's?
Yes.
The Rip City one?
That's nice.
Those are dope.
Those are nice, yeah. Yeah, Portland always does it. When it comes to jerseys, you know, as far as their color scheme, the red and black, they do it good. I mean, they do a good job with it. So, you know, Portland, anytime you're talking about jerseys, Portland usually does a pretty good job with theirs.
Here's an interesting
Utah sometimes does, you know.
Utah's just says, it says Utah in orange. It looks like a sunset. It's various shades of orange starting from a light to a dark orange at the bottom.
Yeah.
And here's an interesting one. The Wizards are going to say District of Columbia.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. I didn't realize that.
But it's like a simple white jersey,
blue
lettering that says District of Columbia.
That's cool.
With the little red and white basketball dotting the eye.
So do you think, we have, you know, we hit this Monday, the 18th, and then we have Christmas that next Monday.
Yeah, this was you're talking about what I asked you earlier?
Yeah, so do you believe that these are going to be the Christmas Day jerseys?
I think so. I think these jerseys will be worn starting Christmas Day because and I don't know if that was an Adidas thing, but for the last 6-7 years,
yeah, we've had individual.
We've had Christmas special jerseys. Christmas jerseys.
Yeah, I guess if you're trying to sell them, this would be the way, you know, to break them out.
And by now, well, first of all, we would have had a rumored leak of potential sketches by October.
It's become a tradition now. It's become a tradition to have a brand new jersey for Christmas. I don't think Nike's just going to sit back and be like, just wear, you know, your statement jersey or your. I think Nike's going to want to get into this tradition, and so I definitely think that the leak was not accidental.
Yeah. So my thing is, and this is what I told you today, I think these are going to be the Christmas Day jerseys.
Yeah, I think so too.
And I think just for this year, so that way. Nike promised us 4 jerseys this year, and some teams were going to get a 5th one. Mm. So this completes your 4 jerseys. So now you have your basis for your jerseys.
Yeah.
And then I think from here on out, you'll get special jerseys and whatnot. And I've always been a proponent of this. I think every NBA team should get a Spanish alternate jersey.
I think so, too.
Yeah. If you're playing, you know, the whole week is Noche NBA, and you're celebrating all that, I don't understand why only your shooting shirts have that. If you can do it on your shooting shirt,
you can do it
it's not that hard to put it on the jersey.
Yeah, I agree.
And
I mean, it's kind of hard to. So some names sound better.
Oh, I agree, yeah. But we're talking about a jersey that you might wear once or twice during during that week. You know, obviously those games are you're gonna see your originals. The Lakers, the
Suns,
the Heat. Those guys are the ones that usually have it the best, and you see the most on there. But I still think every team should rock that jersey.
I think so too.
And the only other thing that I hope Nike continues is I've kind of become a fan of the Christmas Day Color Rush per se jerseys, the solid color jerseys.
Mm-hmm.
I think they should keep that going. I kind of like that Christmas Day. Color jersey scheme to include the 1 year where finally Adidas put 2 and 2 together and had the Bulls and the Celtics play each other, and they were wearing red and green.
Red and green, yeah, that was pretty awesome right there. So that was my bad. It could come out to where it looks good, you know, and it won't be a bad anymore. But I didn't necessarily like the rendition that was put out originally. And then my ugly, I've talked about this before. Free throws, leaving points on the floor. I mean, leaving points, you know, it's whenever you're struggling, one of the best ways to get out of a funk is to go ahead and see the ball go through the hole. And one of the best ways to do that is to shoot free throws. And so the team itself, as far as like Russell Westbrook and Paul George, number one, they're not getting the calls they used to. You know, these are guys, so especially Westbrook, these are guys that you're talking about would average, you know, 10 free throws a game. He's not doing that anymore. You know, he's averaging maybe 7, maybe 6 per game. And when you do have your 6 or 7, he's not making no more than 50% of them. And that's a problem. That's leaving points on the floor, leaving points that you could have that, you know, could turn a 3-point lead into a 6-point lead at the end of the game. Could turn a, you know, a 2-point game into a 4-point game. It's frustrating. It is frustrating right there.
Well, I've always told you that I think that the refs don't know how to, because he's bigger, stronger, faster, how to call fouls for Westbrook. So I've always told you that he doesn't necessarily get as many calls as he should.
Yeah.
And you could say that about a lot of people in the league. So I understand that. I get that. No problem. And I'm not saying this is a conspiracy. I'm not saying that the league is out to get us or anything. It just seems like where other teams get rewarded for having multiple players that can get to the basket and make plays, seems like the Thunder went out and got Paul George and Carmelo Anthony, and the whistles just became silent. Like we're getting penalized. It feels like we're getting penalized for having more playmakers that can get to the rim and not getting the calls.
It just seems like a pendulum swing. Like last year, it was just all about, you know, guys like Harden and Westbrook and James and, you know, constantly getting free throw calls, constantly getting the superstar calls. Yeah. Okay? So we had that. We had, like, you know, James Harden doing the whole, you know, when he's on the three-point line, swinging his arm around and getting it caught. And somebody hitting it, and you know,
the Durant rip move.
Yeah, the Durant rip move, which eventually became a 3-point version of that, which was the Harden rip.
The Harden rip move, yeah.
And so we went from that to now this pendulum comes over to this point where number one, continuation, They're not getting continuation calls like they used to.
The Harden rule. It's basically come down. It's the Harden rule.
But it, I mean,
that whole Euro step to the lane and get that foul call.
I think the continuation call, that's more of a Westbrook rule, because Westbrook used to be able just to, you know, charge into the lane basically, get hit, and get a foul call. You know, and usually it was free throws.
Throw it up, yeah.
You know, it's just they're struggling with that, and then you know they're struggling with that, and then whenever you do get the call, you're not taking advantage of the free throws. Yeah,
you can't make the shot.
You know, and that's it's killing us. It's killing, you know, when we're struggling so much from the field, we're struggling to come up with points. It is tantamount that the team take advantage of any points that they can get. And so I'm looking on here real quick, and I want to see. So he's had 1, 2, 3. So in the 29 games they've played this year, he's only had 3 games in double figures and free throws, and those double figures have been exactly at 10. Like last year, you had games where he shot 18 free throws, 19 free throws. He's not doing that this year. He is averaging, just real quick, looking at his stats, he's averaging 7.3 free throw attempts per game. You know, it's just like, you need those points, man. Like, the Thunder need those points. They need to see the ball go through the bucket. And it's not just Westbrook. Even though Westbrook is the main proponent because he shoots the most free throws, you know, Paul George lately has been going up to the line and shooting 1 out of 2. You know, it just seems like, especially late in games, he goes up. He sunk 2 in Indiana, but he just goes up and, you know, hits 1 out of 2. And it's just, like I said, a 2-point game could be a 4-point game. A 3-point game could be a 5-point game. Mm-hmm. And it becomes easier for the Thunder, but no, they make it hard on themselves. I don't know.
Yeah, you can't leave those give me's. You can't.
No, you can't.
You can't leave those on the board, especially when you're a team that you're 0-8 in games that are 8 points or less. You know, this could be the difference between 0-8 and 4-4.
Yeah, yeah, very true.
And you know, a 4-4 would put you above 500 right now. You see what I'm saying? So, you know, while 4-4 doesn't look that great, it'll be a big shift in what we're doing right now. So
I mean, they're not 0-8 anymore. So in the last 2 weeks they've improved in their close
right
games.
But what I'm saying is, in those 0-8 games, those free throws could be the difference mm-hmm. between 0-8 and 4-4 during
true.
Those games.
That's true. Yeah, that's the difference between probably us having a winning record right now and us being one game below 500 once again. So around the league, Houston keeps on winning.
13 straight wins with Chris Paul in the lineup.
So, completely healthy. Let's say we get to April and Steph Curry's healthy, Draymond Green is healthy, you know, completely healthy. Do you think Houston has a chance against Golden State?
I'm going to say you always have a chance when you have Chris Paul and James Harden.
Mm-hmm.
Past that, it gets a little bit more difficult because you don't match up exactly.
Yeah,
Capella is a guy that can... Maybe, you know, he can definitely match up with Pachulia and probably hold his own with JaVale McGee, yeah. Right? So you let's say that Capella wins that matchup. Your other guys, PJ Tucker, I don't think he's winning a matchup against a healthy Draymond Green or a healthy Kevin Durant. Ryan Anderson is definitely not winning any kind of matchups with
Durant or Green.
Yeah. Who else you got? Do they have Eric Gordon?
Yeah, they do.
Eric Gordon. You might win that matchup, maybe against, let's call it a wash against Klay Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
Let's call that one a push. I think while they can hang with them, I think eventually in a 7-game series, the depth of Golden State beats out the depth of Houston.
Yeah. Here's what I always see with D'Antoni coach teams. Number one, they're 3-point heavy. And here's what I notice about 3-point shooters when it comes to the playoffs. They tend to not make their 3-pointers at the same rate as they did during the regular season.
Yeah, things slow down.
Well, not just that, but I don't know if it's the pressure of the moment. You know, those lower percentage shots become lower. You know, much lower percentage shot whenever the pressure's on. So basically, you know, a close fourth quarter game during a regular season. That's basically the whole game in a playoff game. And so those percentages start to go down. So, you know, as you're dependent on Ryan Anderson, Eric Gordon, you know, P.J. Tucker to make those threes that they used to make, Trevor Ariza, make those threes that they used to make in the regular season, whenever they just don't make them at the same rate, then the pressure goes completely onto Harden and onto Chris Paul now. And I don't think that the players in Houston outside of Harden and Paul are able to sustain what they're doing right now as compared to Golden State. And, you know, most of those guys already have two championships and have been there and have done it already.
Yeah, well, you got to think that a night in, night out, you don't have one team focused only on making defensive adjustments for you. In a seven-game series, the only people that they have to worry about is the Houston Rockets.
Yeah.
And make an adjustment game to game based on what you see. And defensively, Golden State is very tough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, defensively, they're very tough, and they're very good at making adjustments. And then again, on any given night, Klay can go off. Durant can go off. Steph can go off.
Yeah.
And so that forces Houston to shift their defense. And Mike D'Antoni teams aren't necessarily known as great defensive teams.
Which they've been good this season. Don't get me wrong. They have been good this season.
Yeah, they have been. They played great. They've been playing a lot. Well, I would say great for a D'Antoni standard.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. And Durant all of a sudden has emerged as a defensive of the year candidate. Yeah, defensive player of the year candidate. Dude's averaging like 3 or 4 blocks a game.
Yeah, he's crazy. I mean, he's taking the tools that he was given. I mean, this guy, like I've always said, 7-foot shooting guard.
No, he's listed at 6'10".
He's 6'9". He's listed at 6'9", which is just mind-boggling
to me.
Ain't
no way.
I've stood next to him, and I'm like, yeah, there's no way.
I've literally seen him look down and eye to eye to guys that like Steven Adams and
I've seen him look eye to eye to Hasheem.
Like, oh, he was listed at 7'3".
Yeah, Hasheem's 7'3". Like, he's a legit 7'3". This dude, this is not Hasheem with hair 7'3". This is Hasheem if he was bald 7'3". And he's a little bit shorter than him, but he's not necessarily looking at his mouth.
He's not straining his neck.
No, he's not. He's not looking at his mouth. So, you know, this is a guy that's he's about 6'11", 7 foot, and has a wingspan of like 7'3", 7'4".
Mm-hmm.
He's agile as a ballerina out there. And so the guy is able to, he's able to make up space that other players cannot make up. And he's able to take advantage of that and block shots.
Long strides, long arms, closes the gap quickly. Which he's done here in spurts.
But not as sustained. And
as an Oklahoma City Thunder, but more consistently now as a Golden State Warrior.
Let me ask you
this. And I think I would say that's the Draymond Green effect.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's usually, if you're around a great defensive player, you tend to soak up some of that knowledge. And
well, not just that. I think Draymond Green has that, be it as he may, he's what, 6'6", 6'8"?
Yes, Draymond Green is about 6'6".
He still has that.
Long arms, but 6'6".
That bravado, whatever, that, like, you know, you ain't playing defense. He gonna be the first one to whoop your ass.
Yeah, I mean,
if you're not playing defense.
Defense takes a little bit of swagger to play. Yeah. Like, you have to mentally be prepared that on any given night, offense is usually going to trump defense in the NBA because it's an offensively led sport. But, you know, if you're one of the greats defensively, you study your man, you'll know what you need to do in order to lock that man down. Yeah. So keeping on the Warriors train, so apparently Draymond Green has a little bit of a shoulder issue.
Mm-hmm. He's been out for a few games.
That's not healing how they wanted it to heal. I don't necessarily think it's that big of a deal. I think just rest is gonna do the trick here. But, you know, the Warriors are starting to kind of feel a little bit of the effect of playing not just 3 full seasons, but then 20-plus games extra for 3 seasons in addition to that with the playoffs, you know, heading, you know, making finals runs these last 3 years.
With the exception of last year, I think they played the minimal amount of games possible.
Yeah, last year they played...
They played one game above 17. For each round.
Yeah, 17, I think. But then the year before that, you know, they went 7 against... Right. They went 7 against us. They went 7 against Cleveland. They lost that, you know, they lost in the finals that year. And then the year before that, you know, they played a good share of, you know, 20 games. So, I mean, they're starting to feel that. It's starting to feel that effect. And it happens to every dynastic championship team out there. Same thing happened with Miami, with the big three that were there. Same thing happened with the big three in Boston with, you know, Garnett, Ray Allen, and Paul Pierce. So eventually there comes a time where all that basketball catches up with you.
Yeah, you can go back further. The Bad Boys had injuries with Lambeer and stuff like that. The Bulls had injuries with Kerr, sat out a few games. Kukoc got hurt a couple games. Pippen got hurt a couple games.
I think the Bulls got lucky. I think the two-year hiatus with Jordan being retired was a recharging tool.
Allowed them to get their legs back?
Yeah, very true. Yeah, I completely agree with that. It allowed them to get their legs back. It allowed Jordan to get his legs back. And so whenever he came back and they had the full seasons after he came back, they were able to go three in a row. And then, you know, of course, Reinsdorf and
the rest is history.
Yeah, and they decided to destroy the team. But regardless, okay. And then also, as we spoke, Rudy Gobert got hurt again. Derek Favors fell into his leg, sprained his PCL. It says he's going to be out for about at least a month. So that should help us out because we play two games against them. Not that I ever want anybody to get hurt, but when it does happen, it is advantageous for your team, you know? So hopefully that helps us a little bit to make up some ground in the Northwest Division. But yeah,
just make up ground in the Western Conference. Period.
Western Conference. Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, I believe
we're eighth now in the
conference.
Yeah,
we're eighth. So yeah. Yeah. You know,
we're in the playoffs if it started today.
It would be so awesome if, and I'm not saying it would be completely nerve wracking to be the AC because that just means that
the Warriors in the first round.
Well, no, not just that, but I mean, it would just mean that this whole season would basically be the same thing that we're going through right now.
Oh yeah,
win one game, lose one; win two games, lose one; win three games, or I'm sorry, not win three games because we can't do that crap.
Not yet.
Yeah, win one game. You know, it's just like two steps forward, one step back, so on and so forth. But as far as an AC, I would love to be like the strongest ace seed ever, you know,
in the history of ace seeds.
Like I think it was in New York, like during the strike shortened season, in was it 99 that they were a 6 seed and they made it all the way to the finals that year. I would love to be like a team like that, you know. But
99,
yeah, 99.
They had Stark, they had John Starks.
That was, I think that was Ewing last year, and they had Latrell was on that team.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And so they made it to the finals. And I think Ewing got hurt in
the
playoffs.
They couldn't have. Not in 99. They would have been facing the Jordan and the Jordan Bulls in 99 in the Eastern Conference Finals.
It was 2000 then. It was 2000. They made it to the finals like in.
It must have. It had to be 2000.
So Jordan.
Because Jordan won 97, 98, 99. 99.
So Jordan retired and then the NBA had a stoppage.
Yeah, yeah. So,
and so they played a 50-game season that next year.
Probably 2000.
So it was 2000. And the Knicks were a 6 seed. And they made it, you know, they played Indy in the Eastern Conference Finals, and they played, I want to say, L.A. in the Finals, and they got mollywopped. They only won one game. But that was a team that I think Ewing got hurt. He broke his wrist or something like that in the playoffs, I think. And, yeah, so, that'd be kind of awesome to do that. That's just my wish list for this season. If we're going to keep on sucking, if we're going to keep on not being very consistent, let's be consistent enough to get like a 6-7-8 seed and just, you know, let's just go ahead and do what we got to do in the playoffs and see what happens from there.
The 99-2000 season, they got – okay, so the 1998-99 season, they got to the NBA Finals and lost against the Spurs 4-1.
There we go. Yeah, that one.
And then in 1999-2000 season, they went all the way to the conference finals and lost to the Pacers this time. So they played the Pacers in 98-99 and 99-2000 in the conference finals.
Yeah. But yeah, that was the season where they were like the 6th seed and they made it all the way to the finals. Yeah. Okay. So switching gears a little bit. So I just went out with my wife. We had a little date and we saw Thor. Thor Ragnarok, which is a pretty good movie. Probably the best one out of the whole Thor series that I've seen. But, I'm a big fan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the MCU. I know you are more of a comic book fan.
Yes.
Of Marvel. and DC.
Well, no, I mean, I like the MCU too, but I'm also a fan of
The
comics. So I know the histories of most of them.
You know the mythos of it all. Mm-hmm. I just know the movies and what I see in the movies. And so this week, the news came out that Fox and Disney, you know, Disney bought Fox, 21st Century Fox and 20th Century Fox, who, when it comes to Marvel, they own the rights to X-Men, Deadpool, and Fantastic Four.
They have the rights to the other big guys.
Yeah,
What Marvel doesn't own, what the big guys that Marvel doesn't own, Fox owns them, with the exception of Spider-Man.
Yeah, so Spider-Man was owned by Sony.
It's still owned by Sony.
Still owned, but they have a partnership with Disney.
To allow him to be in the MCU.
To allow him to be in the MCU. They split the profits, whatever, so on and so forth. So Disney went ahead and outright bought 21st Century Fox, 20th Century Fox, which is basically the movie division.
The movie division and several TV portions of that, like FX movies.
Yeah.
And other things that had to do with the movies of Fox.
Fox. Yeah. Yeah. So they bought.
For $60 billion.
Yeah, was it like 58.4 or something like that? I mean, what's $1.4 billion? I mean, that's chump change.
What's chump change
for
Disney?
Yeah, for all of us, that's chump change. But yeah, so these guys, they bought Fox, and so now the Marvel Comic Universe, Cinematic Universe, I'm sorry, now has the rights to X-Men, Deadpool, and Fantastic Four.
Well, they don't have the rights of Fantastic Four yet.
They don't.
Okay, so here's the thing about the Fantastic Four. Fox.
First of all, they make horrible movies. That's number one.
Well, the companies that made Fox doesn't actually own the rights to Fantastic Four.
Who owns the rights then?
So a movie studio has the rights to Fantastic Four called like Soundboard. It's a weird little movie studio that they really that's all they own.
Oh,
and
really?
I think it's like a German movie studio, and that's what they own. And basically what they did is the same thing that Sony did with Disney.
Oh, with
So they had the movie rights. They were about to lose them. So Fox ended up making a deal with them saying, hey, we'll just do all the movies for you, and we'll cut you in on some of the profits. And so Fox has been doing the movies under their logo and just kicking the studio that owns the Fantastic Four a check. Uh-huh. So under law, because they're under contract, Disney cannot talk to that studio in order to get the Fantastic Four back. But now that they bought the 20th Century division, basically eliminates the middleman, and they can end up, since they acquired that contract, they can actually keep going with that contract until they either, you know, hell, Disney might just buy that company just to fold them in and get rid of the contract altogether. But so that's how everybody says that Fox owns the Fantastic Four, but they really didn't. So that now that Disney owns that company, they can eliminate the middleman and basically keep that contract still going. And so now fold them into the MCU.
So now, I mean, the MCU is complete now.
Just about.
So we've gone, 10 years now without the mutants in the Marvel comic universe?
Longer. We've gone almost 20 years.
When did Iron Man first come out?
Iron Man came out in 2008. So Fox actually started the
genre. So I'm starting this. I'm starting this with Marvel Studios.
Okay.
As far as
Iron Man. Iron Man didn't actually come out under Marvel Studios. Iron Man was the first movie released.
Okay.
Under Kevin Feige, who was the under the Disney logo. So Iron Man was released under Disney logo right after the success of Iron Man, because it was a gamble at that point to Iron Man, because in the comic book world at that point in time, Iron Man was like a B-level character, a C-level character. He's not
really.
Yeah, we all see Tony Stark and we see him portrayed on the screen aptly by Robert Downey Jr. I think they nailed that. And you're like, oh yeah. And in the comic books, he was eventually elevated to a more significant role, like we see him now in the cartoons and stuff like that. But at that point in time, he wasn't the guy that we know him in the comic book world at that point in time.
So even Iron Man wasn't that big of a deal?
I mean, he was, but he wasn't at the same point in time.
Wow, that's crazy.
I think Robert Downey Jr. definitely did a whole lot to elevate that character status. Uh-huh. And so the year after that, they created Marvel Studios. Iron Man was released under Marvel Productions or something like that. after the success of that movie, they created Marvel Studios, and then all the other movies were released under Marvel Studios with the head of Kevin Feige under the umbrella of Disney, under the the umbrella of ABC under the umbrella.
So
they were, of
so
Disney.
Basically, Iron Man was the archetype, and then
Iron Man was the prototype. Yes,
and then everything else came out.
But way before that, the X-Men started the superhero genre in 2000 with X-Men from Fox.
I got you.
So the superhero genre slowly developed to what it is. At that point in time, it was basically a movie, one superhero movie starting in 2000, which was a success, released about every 3 years.
Yeah.
And then 2008, you had the Marvel Universe, Disney bust on the scene. And then from there, it's exponentially, again, every 3 years, you're releasing a different type of movie. And then from there up into the point now where it's exponentially tripled, we've gone from releasing one or two movies every couple of years to three or four movies a year.
Yeah,
for the next 5 years.
Yeah, and that's three or four movies for Marvel.
For Marvel,
that's without
yeah.
including, you know, DC in this. That's without including anybody else.
Right.
So with that said, up to this point, if you you know if you watch the Marvel movies up to this point, so we're at Thor,
mm-hmm.
And so we're in the middle of Phase Three.
The
right?
end of Phase Three.
We're you know well the end. Well, I mean, yeah. I say the middle because we still got Black Panther.
And not part of Phase Three,
not
technically.
Part of, okay, I'm sorry. I'm just going to shut up when it comes to this. But, you know.
While it comes out before
Phase Four,
before the Avengers movie,
uh-huh.
I guess you could say Black Panther is part of Phase Three. And I guess technically it is part of Phase Three, but I don't really see it like that. They haven't announced a Phase Four yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they've done this on purpose because I think this Disney deal. Was in talks for over a year.
They knew this was coming.
I think they've been working on this for a long time. But you just see the style and the feel of the Black Panther movie, and it almost feels like something different.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess while technically, yes, it's part of Phase 3, I honestly feel like it's an outlier of Phase 3. It's not Phase 3. It's not Phase 4. It's just kind of one of those outliers that almost like Iron Man, you're going to, if done properly, which the movie looks like it's done properly, open up a whole new world to just, let's be honest, minority superheroes.
Yeah.
You know, Black Panther, a Miles Morales, maybe a Miles Morales Spider-Man, who is a Spider-Man from the future,
mm-hmm.
Who's half black, half Puerto Rican. Hopefully a development of other characters. So you're going to get a Miss Marvel movie, a Captain Marvel movie, which is Karen Danvers. Before she became Captain Marvel, she was actually known as Miss Marvel. And now the new Miss Marvel in the comic books is actually a Middle Eastern teenager named Kamala something is her name. So she's now the Miss Marvel. So you're starting to see a lot more minority characters being built in there. In DC, they have a Muslim Green Lantern.
Really?
He's Middle Eastern for sure. I'm not sure if he... I think he's Muslim. I think that's... His name is Baz something. B-A-Z. Mm. Baz Simon or something like that is his name. So he's one of the Green Lanterns in the DC world. So you're starting to see...
A
lot more minority characters
Inclusion,
being elevated.
Okay, yeah.
There's always been there, but they've always been B, C, D level characters.
Mm-hmm.
Or racial... or... stereotyped like all Get Out.
Yeah.
Okay, you also have to take into account the decade and stuff like that that these characters
they
were created in order to, you know, to understand all that.
Okay, so now that we had me and Disney we're so much in cahoots.
You getting that mouse check?
I'm getting that mouse check, man. I'm working for ABC, I'm working for Disney, I'm all that. Okay, so now that they have X-Men, cuz the thing about X-Men are a big part of the Marvel Universe. I mean, it's not just, like, we've had, you know, as far as looking at the movies, we've seen X-Men all by itself. We've seen, you know, Avengers and all them all by themselves. But in the comic books, they merge and they mix together and they fight against each other, fight with each other.
We've had X-Men's become Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had crossovers like that. There's some of the popular comic books is the X-Men versus the Avengers. These guys all know each other during one point in the Civil War storyline of the comic books, which they took and based the Civil War movie off of. You had a group of the world's smartest people known as the Illuminati.
Mm-hmm.
Superheroes, I should say. The smartest superheroes known as the Illuminati, basically trying to prevent some of these catastrophes and trying to figure out what to do in the event behind the scenes. And some of those guys are – the guys on this board are Tony Stark.
Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange is one of them. You had Professor X. Uh-huh. You had Reed Richards, who is the leader of the Fantastic Four. These guys, especially when you deal with cosmic beings like Thanos and stuff like that, the guy that they go to the most – is Reed Richards, because that's like his specialty. Mm-hmm. If Reed Richards is like the smartest dude in the MCU, and you know his powers are obtained through cosmic radiation in space when they were up there, and they deal with a lot of cosmic entities like Galactus, the Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
So that's their area for strength. And I believe if the Marvel had control of these guys, you would have already seen them. Go to them. You would have seen. Yeah. You definitely would have seen Tony Stark's go to Reed Richards at the Baxter Building in New York City, a long time ago.
Yeah. No, I mean it's exciting to see what the future has now. I'm you know, one of the biggest things that I look forward to. And I've always looked forward to this in a Marvel movie, but I'm extremely curious to see what the after movie. What are they called?
The rap parties?
No. Like the after movie clips.
Oh, the mid-credit scene and the post-credit
scenes. Yeah, the mid-credit scene and post-credit scenes. I'm absolutely curious to see what it'll be for the next Marvel movie, which is Black Panther, that comes out in February. To see if you get even just a little inkling of something from the X-Men or from the Fantastic Four characters within the MCU.
Well, here's the thing. So... Hugh Jackman was the longest portraying superhero on screen. He portrayed Wolverine for almost 18 years. And then, contrary to what people believe, Wolverine in the comic book is actually a short dude. The dude's like 5'6", 5'7". He's a short, stocky guy. And Hugh Jackman obviously is a 6'2", 6'3", kind of guy. So he plays a taller, skinnier, still jacked, but version of Wolverine. And I think he portrayed him excellent. I think he captured the essence of Wolverine. But you look at it, and he retired from Wolverine. And he did go out and say at one point in time, the only way he would consider coming back is if they became part of the MCU. Mm. And now that they're part of the MCU, somebody asked him about that. And he's like, you know, I think my time as Wolverine has passed. And I think I would like to see somebody else kind of pick up the mantle and go with it. But you look at that, and you're like, can you imagine like a Hugh Jackman Wolverine sitting in a room with Tony Stark and Thor and Hulk.
That would have been awesome.
Like all these guys with egos and tempers and stuff like that, and just see them interact. Or you could see a Wolverine bucking the authority of a Captain Rogers kind of thing, even though Wolverine was a military dude, you know what I mean? Kind of the same dynamic that you see him and Cyclops have, you know, kind of going at each other. It's just all the possible, like, what ifs. You know, you imagine Charles Xavier meeting up with, you know, Captain Rogers or Reed Richards or whatever. Yeah.
And now you have
the possibility of that in the future. So now Disney has a big decision to do because they just finished filming the X-Men Dark Phoenix movie, which they rebooted. And so far, for the most part, it's been pretty good. They've had a combination of older characters and younger characters, mostly younger character versions of these. And they just finished that movie's in post production. So Disney
is a movie called New Mutants?
No, it's called Dark Phoenix. Mutants is a different movie.
So are those the last two, I guess, Fox movies using X-Men?
Well, no, that money's going straight to Disney now.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
But Disney now has the option of releasing or not releasing that movie.
Oh, wow!
Because that movie's in post production. So you got to imagine that Disney, the first thing that they're going to do is sit down and watch these movies. And if they're not any good, they really don't have to release it.
They can almost do like a clean reboot.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not release the movie, give it a year or two, and boom, pop these characters in. But we knew ahead of time, the Russo brothers told us ahead of time that in this Avengers Infinity War movies, they were going to use 67 characters. We don't have 67 characters established up until this point.
Yeah.
So you can imagine that maybe a Wolverine makes it into the movie.
Oh, you
not did? not a big part, but you can imagine that maybe some of these a way to introduce these X-Men into the MCU is that they show up for this giant battle.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that would be either not necessarily this movie because this movie's already filmed, but the second Infinity War
movie.
Oh, this movie, really?
Yeah, this movie. That movie's filmed, but I mean, you can. There's gonna be reshoots. There's always reshoots to fix little things. And some of these characters, you can just literally CGI them in there. I'm not expecting them to have big parts.
Yeah.
Some of these X-Men characters, you can just CGI them into the movie, and then come back and cast them later on.
That's interesting. That's interesting. I mean, I love the idea of. It's basically it's taking all the different players from different teams. Let's say taking all the players from the different areas that you the different eras that you loved in basketball. So I'm talking about looking at, you know, the Jordan, you know, Bulls. You're talking about looking at the, you know, the Lakers, the Magic Johnson Lakers, the Larry Bird Celtics, and just taking all those guys and let's say they were all separated for some reason. And putting them on the same court together, like Dream Team, you know, like just saying, hey, go out there and do what you got to do to make this great. And so
it's like Iceman, it's like saying, you know, seeing George Iceman Gervin play against Kevin Durant or LeBron guard Magic Johnson.
Yeah.
Or Kobe, you know, play against Jordan in
like
his prime.
We, as sports fans, we never are ever going to be afforded that opportunity to see that. You can go ahead and put it on a video game all you want. It's never going to be the real thing.
Right.
But to be able to kind of see that in a cinematic universe, to be able to see that now as far as, oh, man, you know, for the last 10 years, been wondering, man, what would a Iron Man versus Wolverine battle look like? Or what would a so on and so forth? And now you're able to do that. And you're able to do that under the guidance of, some, you know, of an entity like Disney that knows what they're doing as far as making movies.
Well, the MCU, under Kevin Feige's guidance, not all movies have been great, but the majority of them have been above average.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, there's been some movies in there where you're like, ah, it's left a little bit to be desired, but you understand why they did it. Some of the Iron Man movies were there to set up other movies.
Of course, yeah.
So they weren't as great as they could have been, right? Iron Man 1 was great. It was a hit. It was a surprise. Nobody expected this, okay? Iron Man 2 was a setup, right? Iron Man 2 set up Captain America. Captain America 1 came out banging.
Yeah.
Captain America 2, not as great, but it was also a setup for the Avengers movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you understand that, but for the most part, most of these Marvel movies are great. They're good. And you can't say the same for Fox when they were cutting these movies. And obviously, they've rebooted Spider-Man twice in the last 10 years over there in Sony. So,
and both of them failed.
Well, I think The Amazing Spider-Man 1 was good. I think 2 didn't live up to its potential. And I think Spider-Man 1 and 2 with Tobey Maguire were great. 3 killed that series.
It did. I hated that movie so much.
So, you know, it's just the what ifs. And like now, you know, the thing is with these contracts, though, is here's where I think a lot of these guys get locked into 5 or 6 picture deals, and that's a lot.
That's a lot of time.
That's a lot of time as a character, and now you got guys like Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans. These guys are working off. They've already ended their fulfillment and signed on for a few more, but Robert Downey Jr. is costing Disney a boatload because the way he negotiated his contract was for a lower salary but a kickback of – the back end of the of, you know, the DVD sales and all that other stuff, post-production box office sales, which for what they thought would have been a steal because, again, Iron Man 1 was a gamble. You look at that movie and you're like, oh, that was great, whatever. That was a gamble for them. And so I think the last Avengers movie that he was in, it cost him $50 million for Robert Downey Jr. So, you know, those contracts are getting bloated and bloated and bloated. And so now you run the risk of them basically going into a James Bond type role where they're just keeping the character. They're just new actor playing
new
it this
actor.
Time. Because, you know, it cost them a lot of money. But then, you know, now you have these newer properties and you're trying to lock in these guys. And, you know, when they're locked into these deals, there's not a whole lot of room to do other movies or other things.
That's true, yeah.
Because these movies are filming either back-to-back or consecutively. There's not a whole lot of free time in there to do other things.
And then actors tend to get bored. And actors tend to, you know, want to do their own things, want to do, you know, there's some actors, you look at actors and you look at especially action actors like you have in the Avengers movies and when you have all that, and you're like, you know, these guys, they love what they do as far as that. But those actors, they're, you know, some of those guys are classically trained actors and they want to do a serious movie here or there. They want to do a drama here or there.
Or passion projects.
Or a passion project, exactly. Sometimes they get so famous that now they have the opportunity to do that passion project that they wanted to do, But if they don't have the time, you know, they can kind of come back.
And then you I understand, you know, CG, motion capture, that mm-hmm. stuff isn't easy to do, to act with. And, you know, there's a lot of rigors you have to train. You have to get into the shape of the character.
Yeah.
There's a lot of training, a lot of dieting, and a lot of, you know, harnesses and stuff like that. So I can imagine that gets on a while. That gets old after a while. But, you know, Robert Downey Jr. films scenes where he's literally looking into the camera, and that's the heads up display unit scenes when he's in his Iron Man suit and stuff like that. And I'm getting a 50 mil check. You know,
yeah.
where do I sign up?
Keep on going. Let's keep this train rolling.
And you know, he's going to stand to gain even more when this Avengers movie comes out.
Oh, I know.
So I think you have to be leery that some of your favorite characters are going to die or going to get replaced with a different person.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, you got to keep the blood fresh. You know, you got to bring new blood in sometimes. Mm-hmm. You got to shock the system.
And so Fox has always been good at that. Again, Fox beat everybody to the punch with a good superhero movie, started that genre. And then on top of that, mm-hmm. they were the first to hit a R-rated superhero.
Yeah.
And it was Deadpool. A hit. And Deadpool. And everybody's like, oh, my God, they're going to be Mickey Mouse and they're going to get, you know. And I think now you're going to see, because the MCU has established themselves, that now they have an ability to create a adult level version of the MCU. Mm-hmm. Still keep them in the same area, but allow those type of movies to be those type of movies.
Logan was rated R too, right?
Logan was the rated R. The president of not Feige, Iger, Bob Iger, who is the president of Disney, has already come out and said that he's going to leave Deadpool as an R-rated movie, that he thinks that there is in this area a culture for those type of movies to exist. And so now you can get those movies to be the movies that they are and still have them, you know, you can still have Deadpool be a sarcastic, fourth wall breaking person when he teams up with Spider-Man. He just might not be cussing as much, but you can still have the sarcasm and the wit and have those double meaning jokes in there.
PG-13 movies nowadays are pushing the limits as it is. Yeah, go ahead and kind of add a, you know, an F-bomb in there.
Right. The rating systems are, and if you don't know this, Deadpool and Spider-Man team up a lot in the comic books.
Do they really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it's kind of one of those things where Spider-Man is annoyed by Deadpool, but, you know, they help each other and they're friends and not friends. And
they live in the same area, basically.
Everybody lives in New York.
Yeah. Look, screw the rest of the world.
Let's just be honest. Everybody lives in New York. You know, you've got Yonkers. You've got...
It's not Yonkers. It's Yonkers.
No, I'm sorry. It's Yancey Street. You've got Yancey Street. You've got Harlem. You've got Uptown. Mm-hmm. You've got Bleecker Street, which I think is in, I want to say, Queens. You have Spider-Man in Queens.
Yeah.
The X-Men in upstate New York. All these guys are in New York because that was where Marvel headquarters was for the longest time. And you're always going to draw what you know. So, you know, these guys, and then you can even point to Captain America 2, where on the Triskelion, they were targeting all the threats.
Yeah.
And on there, I don't know if you ever noticed this, Stephen Strange's name pops up on that screen.
Oh,
and it's
really?
One of those things you see on there. So you got to imagine that some of those names that we couldn't see were X-Men.
Yeah, probably. I'm pretty sure.
So, and you can always tie it back into that they've always, you know, the wink, wink, we know that they exist, we just can't talk about them kind of situation.
Well, I mean, didn't they had a situation in, was it Avengers 2, where they introduced, was it Maximilianoff and Scarlet Witch?
Petro Maximoff and Wanda Maximoff. Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver.
And Quicksilver. Quicksilver is supposed to be the son of...
They both are.
Oh, yeah, they're both the children of, was it Magneto?
Magneto, yeah.
Yeah, so they're both Magneto's children, but they could never say.
Here's the legal loophole because of that.
Uh-huh.
So the only reason they were able to use those characters is because they were both Avengers and X-Men.
Yeah, and so they had a Quicksilver in the MCU.
Right.
And at the same time, they had a Quicksilver in the X-Men movie. Right. They came at the same time.
Right. They came out within months of each other.
Exactly.
And so here, the loophole was that Fox could never talk about their time as the Avengers, and the Avengers could never talk about them as mutants.
Oh, okay.
So now, so that's where you get the whole metahuman term and stuff like that. Uh-huh. But now you can have metahumans and mutants. Now you can actually, now that they own Fox, the 20th Century Fox, you can talk about meta mutants and stuff like that.
Yeah, instead of saying metahuman.
You know, well, you can still have your metahumans. You can introduce your mutants now. Mm-hmm. You can introduce your Atlanteans, your version of the Atlanteans. Which is Submariner, Namor, Prince Namor, who's also one of the Illuminati, the smart guys.
Okay.
And so you have a whole wide range of areas to go here. It's just a matter of, you know, the scripts, basically.
So this is one of the great things about having your own podcast. You can go ahead and kind of talk about your own interests also. I mean, so, you know, this is a Thunder podcast, yes. But, you know, it's one of these things that, whenever you have something like this happen big, you know, I feel this is a great avenue to go ahead and talk about it and kind of bring it up to some of our listeners that may also be Thunder fans and also, you know, movie buffs.
Well, shout
buffs.
Out to our boy Patrick Patterson, who is a big movie buff.
Yeah, man, that guy, you know, that guy in the off season, that's all he did was watch, you know, the top movies and watch, you know, he's a very much a,
cinephile.
Cinephile, yeah. Somebody that loves movies and goes to watch them all the time. So shout out to him. He's the one that, you know, introduces our podcast every time. And so when it comes to movies, you know, just something that we're very interested in, especially the comic book movies, you know, I sometimes wish that the Transformers movies would kind of move into, you know, to get under the umbrella of Disney, because I don't know. I just don't know that they've been making them, doing them as well as they should be.
Well, you know,
as far as the storyline goes and things of that nature.
It's hard when you got a lot of, I think, Transformers issues is that you had Megan Fox, who got into it with Michael Bay and was fired, and so they had to replace her. Then Shia LaBeouf goes off the deep end, and they have to replace him.
Do it! Do it!
So you have these characters that we grew and love, and the original, and then the story supposedly keeps continuing to evolve, but with other people, and it just doesn't feel right. Yeah. Like, you saw the development of Shia LaBeouf and Bumblebee and all this other stuff, and now
you just
replace it with other people, and you're supposed to just pretend like this is, like, they're gonna keep going without and so it's hard to say. And but did you know that now that so domestically last year Disney obviously was number one with 26%.
Oh, domestic box office. Now they're up to 40.
Fox has 13% box office. So now together they have 40% box office domestically.
That's it. So, okay, so let me ask you this. So that's kind of scary because, so within the box office, I mean, if you own 40 to 50%, that's basically a monopoly. You're basically owning 50% of the revenue in movies that comes out.
Well, it just means that you make good ass movies.
Well, man, yeah, okay. So it means you make good movies. Yes, very true. But is that an issue at all? Do you think that could be an issue at all?
Yeah, the issue is going to be, and it's going to affect you and me in our pockets.
Exactly, yeah.
Because they own 40% of the box office, there's not this necessarily cutthroat competition to get movies out and try to bring home, you know, everybody's looking for that next big blockbuster. Everybody's looking for that next big Oscar worthy script and stuff like that, that your company produces, or the next, for example, the next Get Out that
cost just looked $5 million to make.
And people were projecting maybe 10, 15, and that thing blew up for like $100 million. Yeah. Everybody's looking for that next one. Well, when you have a lot of properties that bring in that type of money, you don't necessarily have to bend to movie theaters' wills, right?
Yeah.
You don't, you know, basically, you don't have to chase them to play your movies. They are going to have to start chasing you. Mm. And when they start chasing you, we're the ones footing the bill. Prices of movies have gone up in the last few years.
Yeah.
To right now, an IMAX movie is like $16.50 at the AMC theater here in Lawton. It could be more in other places, but here in Oklahoma and Lawton, it's about $16.50, right? So let's round it up to $17. Well, now that Disney owns a huge chunk of that money, and it might cost AMC more to get these movies, they might in turn raise the prices of the admission to, you know, so we could potentially see in the next 3 to 5 years, $20-$25 movie tickets.
Oh my gosh.
And guess what? People are still going to go to the movie theaters.
They are, yeah.
And they know they're not, the movie production companies are not worried about you not coming to the movies because they know you're going to come.
Well, you know, you say that, like, So one of my favorite websites that I go to just, you know, sometimes from time to time is Box Office Mojo. Mm-hmm. I love going there. I love to see how the movies are doing. And it didn't seem like this year the movies did that well domestically. They might have done great, you know, when you put it all together and you say a movie makes $1 billion. But domestically, that $1 billion may have just been like 250, and then it made $750 million worldwide.
Until this week.
Of course, yeah, and still Star Wars.
Star Wars made, you know how much it made Thursday night?
I think it made, what was it, 100 and...
No, I'm talking about just Thursday night.
What did it make?
$49.6 million.
Which was lower than the previous, what was it, Star Wars movie or something like that. It wasn't...
No,
it
for an opening night, it's up there.
Yeah, yeah, okay, so...
I mean, it's the biggest opening, it's the biggest midnight release or whatever, mm-hmm. Thursday night movie release this year, to this year.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're always...
I got you on that.
Yeah, you're always going to have those movies that...
But, like, I saw, like, the biggest domestic movie this year has been Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
And that made another Disney product that made $500 million. But I mean, I don't know. I was always used to seeing like the blockbusters make $600-700 and having like two or three of those per year.
There's not a whole lot of blockbusters, and the genres have been limited. They've been narrowed. A lot of the stuff that you see now, like I said, next year alone, there's three Marvel movies alone.
Yeah.
And then you've got one or two DC movies, I think, coming out next year. Mm-hmm. So the genres have narrowed. There's not a whole lot of, outside of superhero movies, name one movie that just got you super excited that you're like, oh man, I have to watch this movie. Like, this thing seems awesome.
Nothing.
Exactly.
Yeah, nothing.
You know, these other movies, they look good and they're like, okay, but it's nothing like, you know, kids or you're telling your wife, like, babe, we got to find a babysitter. Mm-hmm. We're going to this movie opening night. We have to see this
like,
movie.
Like, I would like to see The Disaster Artist. That looks like a pretty good movie. That's the one with John Franco.
Yeah.
It looks like a pretty good movie.
James?
James Franco, him too. John Franco.
John's that third brother. John, James, Dave, and John.
Yeah, John used to hit clean up for the New York Mets, I think, or something like that. But yeah, so, but it's not, it's one of those movies that I look at it and I'm like, maybe Netflix.
Yeah.
Maybe when I get HBO for free for that one weekend a year from now and it's on there, I'll record it.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of movies that you just see outside of superhero movies and fantasy movies and stuff like that. They're just, you know, there's not a whole lot of thrillers. You don't have Bad Boy type movies. You don't have John McClane,
really
Die Hard movies. Hell, you know, the next James Bond movie is not supposed to come out till the year after next, I think.
And it still has Daniel Craig, right?
It still has Daniel Craig. But, you know, there's not those type of movies that you can build a franchise off of that are attracting you. You have the Fast and the Furious, but while I enjoy the franchise and I'll watch every single movie, they're starting to kind of...
But, you know, Fast and the Furious, they've kind of become superheroes in and of their own.
Well, I read an article, and I think this is 100% true.
So the franchise started as a racing thing, and the allure of racing.
Right. It was a car racing, street racing movie that wasn't expected to do much more than maybe one or two movies, and now we're on nine.
Yeah.
And it's transformed itself with the realism that is James Bond, that is less fantasy and more based in realism as far as like a spy and stuff like that would do. I think Fast and the Furious has elevated itself into that fantasy level that fills the gap that James Bond doesn't have. So you have cars that you have these big, brawny muscle cars that are souped up with tank parts and survives falling down the Caucasus Mountains in the Baltic
region.
And you know, everybody gets out just fine. No concussion, no nothing. Everybody just gets out the car. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can go with that for the movie and, you know, allow yourself to understand and know that, you know, that's probably not going to happen in real life, but, you know, I can go with it because you don't have those type of movies. But they're just not those type of movies that are just absolutely. And I think on top of that, you have the combination of the economy bouncing back from several years of lows. Households, the middle class basically disappearing because you either have money or you don't.
Yeah.
There's just not enough money going around, and everything keeps getting more and more expensive.
That's true. That's very true. So, Yeah, this has been fun. This has been fun talking about something else other than Thunderbird. Because here, I'm gonna be honest with you. I love my Thunder. Don't get me wrong, but this season has been frustrating. This season has been something different, and so being able to talk about something else that interests us, has been fun. So, you know, we hope to maybe do this more often with you guys. And maybe give you something else. And in the end, we'll probably just go ahead and turn this into two different podcasts.
Yeah, we might need to split this one. Yeah, I got a little winded.
We'll probably split this one. But yeah, but other than that, thank you guys for joining us. As always, please hit us up on Twitter. Send us your Twitter questions. I didn't get any Twitter questions this week. So hit us up on Twitter. Give us your Twitter questions. And just keep listening. You know, listen to us on iTunes. Give us a 5-star review to help us out. But other than that, we will talk to you guys next week. You guys all take care.
Have a good one.
All right.